Hello everyone, today I'm thrilled to talk to John Saad, a renowned TV and radio personality from Lebanon who has made a significant mark in the world of media. John is the founder and CEO of the official Lebanese Top 20 and has had an impressive career spanning over 25 years in radio, TV and print. His journey in media started as an advertising executive and evolved into launching and managing promotional and event planning firms across more than 10 countries, including Lebanon, the UAE, Jordan, the US, and UK. John's talents also led him to spearhead Virgin Radio Jordan and host the first French radio show in the UAE, as well as the iconic music show on MTV Lebanon, which I have to say, I was personally a big fan of. But John...
Long time ago.
But John isn't just known for his success in media. He is also an adventurer at heart and a passionate trekker. After years of exploring the majestic mountains of Lebanon, he has literally taken his love for trekking to new heights. In April 2023, already in his 50s, John completed the Everest Base Camp trek, followed by conquering Mount Kilimanjaro in June 2024, so just a couple of months ago. I'm very excited to dive into John's latest mountaineering adventures, and I'm sure he has many interesting and inspiring stories to share with us today. John, welcome to the IJK podcast.
Hi, Matt. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me today. And it's a pleasure again
Today it's John the Mountain Lover.
Absolutely.
You got with.
Yes, okay. Yes. Today is John the Mountain Lover, the mountain climber and trekker.
Outdoor enthusiast.
The outdoor enthusiast, exactly. Question, John, are you actually a mountaineer or a trekker? Do you trek or do you actually climb as well using equipments?
It's totally different. Actually, they both fall under the same umbrella of outdoor enthusiasts, but mountaineering is something and trekking is something. Trekking is, you know, when you go from point A to point B in nature. And that trek is actually the journey which takes you from one point to the other without having to actually climb technical mountains.
Okay.
Once you start climbing technical mountains, which actually require some technical, climbing skills, then you start tackling mountaineering issues. Mm-hmm. But mountaineer, I'm simply a trekker, an outdoor enthusiast. Trekking is the right word because I love the outdoors and I like to stay out for long periods of time when I'm going climbing mountains or from point A to point B within Lebanon, my country, or outside Lebanon.
Okay, very clear. Thanks for the explanation. John, first tell me about the moment you decided to trek to Everest Base Camp at this stage in your life. What sparked that desire?
As you said in your introduction, I've always been working in the advertising field, and that's my main job, and still is right now. I'm still in advertising. So everything I've done musically on TV, my radio shows, TV shows, or actually anything I do outside as a trekker, these are extracurricular activities. 7 years ago, let me tell you how I came into, how I was introduced to the outdoors and what made me the guy that I am today. I was introduced to a Lebanese mountaineer. Her name is Joyce Azam. And she used to climb mountains when I got to meet her for the first time, like 8 years ago. And she was on the journey of completing the Seven Summits. Seven Summits is actually when you climb the peak of each continent on planet Earth. Okay. For instance, the States or North Africa, it is Mount Denali. If you're talking Africa, it's Mount Kilimanjaro. So she was on her journey and she needed sponsors to complete her journey. And she came to me so that we can, try to find some sponsors. And back then, before we started working together to hunt for sponsors, she told me, "You're going to be selling me as a mountaineer, So, and you know nothing about the outdoors. So I have to take you with me on a journey, and we need to have a hike together, and then we can see if you can sell me correctly or not. And I did. She took me on a journey to the highest peak of Lebanon, which is Unit Sauda. That was my first ever hike. And we hiked from early morning till the evening. So I did a whole day outdoor trek with her. And this is how I got my first, you know, contact with the outdoors. And I was totally out of it before that. And because I simply adored it, and I loved it since that day, which is like 8 years ago, until today. Every weekend I go outdoors and I go climb mountains, etc., etc. So it's because of her actually that I got my first taste of the outdoors, and it was the best thing I've done in my life.
So she ignited your passion for the mountains.
Yes, and I always talk about her. On in interviews, I told her the other day, you will always be part of my life because it's because of you that I am the guy that I am today.
Great, great. And why Mount Everest in particular, John? Like, this is kind of a difficult a challenge,
yes,
right?
I have to correct you. I did the Everest base camp.
Base camp, yes.
I didn't climb Mount Everest, and this is a huge difference. When you go to the base camp trek, this is the base camp of Mount Everest is the hometown of all those who are going to climb the mountain. So all I did is, it takes us 7 days to go. You fly to a mountain called Lukla in Nepal, and you have to walk all throughout the mountains there until you reach base camp. So I did only the trek. So, and I did it because I wanted to meet actually all the mountaineers I've been following on Instagram. I've, you know, throughout the past few years, I made some connections with people who do that as a job, climbing companies, Sherpas in Nepal, outdoor enthusiasts like me. Mm-hmm. So this is where they go. So this is why I wanted my first outdoor experience to be in the Valley of the Himalayas, to try to meet as many people as possible and see all those, you know, in this valley, you have 8 of the world's 14 8,000ers in that only valley. Uh-huh. So you have the biggest mountains in the world in this valley.
Okay.
Meet all sorts of people, and it's really exciting.
That's great. And how high is the Everest base camp when it comes to altitude, and how long does it usually take to complete the full trek?
Yeah, the base camp, actually, you fly to Kathmandu. From Kathmandu, you fly to Lukla. Lukla is a mountain village in Nepal. It has a small airport. It's actually the highest and most dangerous airport in the world because planes have to go in between mountains, you know, to align and be able to land on that airport. So from Lukla, you walk all the way to Everest Base Camp. It takes you 6 to 8 days, depending upon...
Wow, 6 to 8 days to get there?
Yes, to get there, yes. You have to go through villages, mm-hmm. and yes, it's a long trek. Getting to Base Camp from Lukla back and forth takes you between 10 and 14 days. Again, depending upon your pace, depending upon sometimes if you want to do it and be cool about it, it takes 14 days. You want to be quicker, you can go and do it. But in it takes you at least 10 days to go and come.
Okay.
And for me, 11 days. So,
and in terms of altitude, how much do you climb in the trek?
It's 5,400 meters. I don't know in feet, probably in Toronto. You have to make all the calculations. No,
yeah, we use both. We use metric as well.
So it's 5,400, a little bit less. It's 5,364 or 67 meters.
Okay.
This is the altitude from the base camp.
From the base camp
side, but Everest is the double of
it's
that.
It's 8,000 something, 8,848,
okay. Yes, meter.
Is it difficult to do that trek? That trek?
It's not easy, but it's not difficult because it's not technical. When I say if for everything I do outdoors,
yes,
when it's technical, it means when it doesn't require technicalities. You know, when you climb, you use roping,
yes.
You climb with your hand, etc. You need some technical skills to do that. When you walk, all you need is your brain. And once you decide, and of course, some physical awareness and some physical, at a minimum of physical health, that, you know, you can at least walk a few days. If you haven't tried it and if you haven't walked or trekked in your life, it will be very, very difficult to do it for the first time. But if you are a regular, if you're active, mm-hmm. and you go on regular hikes and you have the desire to do it, you can do it. It is a trek which everyone can achieve, but again, you need to have at least some outdoor experience, because at the end of the day, you are trekking in negative temperatures.
Uh-huh.
You sleep. Okay. You sleep in lodges, or actually tea houses. This is how they call them, and you have no heating.
Ah,
so
there are some negative challenges that come with.
Yes,
it.
Yes, exactly. You can't. These places are very cold places, non-heated. The higher you go, and the closest you get to base camp, you have very basic tea houses. Like you know, the my room was to be 2 meters square meters room, a piece of wood as your bed, and that's it. So you just put on your sleeping bag and you sleep and all your clothes.
And you sleep in a sleeping bag. There's no bed, basically.
Well, in lower camps, yeah. Not lower camps, but lower villages, you can have not really beds, but, you know, a more developed room, let's.
Yeah.
But the higher you go.
With a mattress, so, yeah. Maybe a mattress, that's it.
Some do have mattresses, some don't. It's simple, bed, okay. Yes.
So the bare basics, but at least, basically.
Yeah. Basics, yeah, but at least you have, you know, and
a roof, yes, over your head.
Roof over your head, and that.
John?
So, yeah, you need to have the desire to do it.
Okay. When you talk about those altitudes, 5,000 and above, is there any risk of suffering from what we call hypoxia? Like
from 5,000, listen... the risk comes from altitude above 7,000.
Ah, okay.
I'm talking vis-a-vis a regular person with no specific issues.
Okay.
So if you are just a normal person, you have no health issues, you shouldn't have any problems going up above 5,000 meters, especially when you do your job. What I'm saying is, your job means when you do acclimatization days.
So there is a there is some sort of preparation before you start.
There is preparation, exactly. An acclimatization day is the following. If let's say you want to go above 5,000, you need to go to that altitude a day before, sleep at a lower altitude. So you climb a 5,000 mountain, you go down. You sleep at 4,000, and then you go up again the next day so that you help your body acclimatize. You know? So if you do that, because when we did the Everest Base Camp trek, we had 2 acclimatization days before we went above 5,000 meters. When I did Kilimanjaro, which is even higher, it's almost 6,000 meters, it's 5,900 meters, I did also 2 acclimatization days before. When you do these, The human body and the breathing system that we have do acclimatize.
And can adapt. They can adapt to this change.
Relatively easy. But the problem starts from 7,000 meters and above, because the oxygen level really drops. At Kilimanjaro, which is almost 6,000 meters, I'm going to say it's like 40% less oxygen than sea level, almost half the oxygen level. It's fine. It's not recommended to stay too mm-hmm. long, but if you go above 7,000, you need oxygen masks. Okay. Go above. Above 8,000 meters, if you climb Everest, you definitely need those above 8,000 meters. And it is called the death zone because no one knows how your body will react to an 8,000 meters plus altitude. So it is definitely not...
It's only- low. It's very low in oxygen, right?
Yes, and usually. You have to use oxygen mask.
You have to use a mask. I see. Okay. So when you were on those trails, let's talk about Everest or even Kilimanjaro. And when you first set foot on those trails, did you have any doubts or fears going into them? Or you were reassured initially?
Fears, definitely, of course, because I'm not a regular climber. I'm 57 and I started my climbing career or hobby or whatever journey at age 50. So
okay.
only 7 years or 8 years ago. So definitely fear exists because I'm a normal person and I have doubts, of course. But I didn't doubt I can do it because let me tell you one thing. In Lebanon, I climb each and every weekend and I'm used to long treks. Mm-hmm. And the way these climbs are made, it's, you know, you do every day like 10 to 15 kilometers hikes and you climb in which you have like 7 to 1,000 meters of ascent per day when you do those climbs. This is what I do here in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. So I didn't doubt the physical part because I'm used to it. But of course, you have some fears because of the extreme cold, because you never know what can happen, because you're far from everything when you're in the middle of the Kilimanjaro trek. It's not like you can have your phone, guys, you know, I'm tired, come pick me up. You have to do it all by yourself.
Yes.
If you're in the Khumbu Valley, at the Valley of the Himalayas, you cannot also, it's the same thing. You have to call an helicopter to pick you. And it's not easy.
Yeah.
So I had some fears, but I knew that I'm going to be able to do it because I so much wanted it.
Okay.
And it goes back to what I said earlier. If you really want to do it, you will do it.
Yeah, for sure.
So you know what you're going to. And I even have treks in Lebanon during winter. So I do climb in negative temperatures while it's snowing. So I've done the exercise in Lebanon. So it's the application when I go outside.
So it's all about preparation. So you were prepared.
Yeah.
And yes, this makes exactly. a big difference.
And the passion was here. Again, it's very mental. If you want to do it, you can do it.
Absolutely.
But if you are the kind of person that like, you know, you like your own
comfort
and you're not ready to step outside exactly your comfort zone, you might not be able.
Yeah, I can understand. I see. And yeah. What are other challenges that you faced? Like when it comes to food, for example, you have to pack your own food with you?
Yeah, I mean, these, and this is a great question to ask me because I'm a difficult guy when it comes to food. I'm not easy. But when you go with those people, when you trek outside and you do those journeys, I usually ask what is the kind of food we're going to be eating. And I try to negotiate as much as possible, to have what I like on the menu, even though it means I have to pay some extra because this is very important. You know, after a whole day of climbing and trekking, you don't want to come back to your room
yes.
or to your sleeping bag without
starving
a nice meal.
Yeah.
Or starving, exactly. I had some reserves. I took, you know, dried food, like those...
Nuts.
No, dried food, you know, the food in which you add only hot water and they become meals. Like real mountaineers, what they do when you know, when they are on mountains and far from everything they eat, or when you go to the South Pole or the North Pole for long expeditions, usually you take dried food. You know, it's a bag. You can find it everywhere. All you need to do is add some hot water so you have all sorts of food, spaghetti bolognese, you You add the hot water and it becomes...
Noodles, right? Some noodles are like that.
Everything. Yes. Everything you can imagine do exist. But I did good negotiations with the companies I traveled with, and usually I had the food that I wanted.
Okay.
And by the way, I took from Lebanon some, you know, the za'atar.
Yes. The thyme.
The thyme, so which I can add on everything, some cheese from Lebanon. You know, I always take...
Mune, as they say. Yes, exactly.
And a lot of snacks, of course.
Okay, that's reassuring, because the last thing one wants to have is, you know, while they expend all that energy climbing, and you know, not to on the backside have enough food to replenish those energies.
But when you go to the Everest Base Camp, it's actually very easy to eat the right things, because all along the way you have the villages. So when you go from one town to the other, you're coming in at a regular village. They sell chocolate, you have tea houses, they have, you know, it's like going to a restaurant. Okay, of course, it's a little bit different. It tastes different as well. You don't have meat because you are far from everything, but a lot of, you know, pasta-oriented food and stuff like that. But
they are mostly vegetarian in those areas as well?
Yes. Okay. Specifically, especially in Nepal, you know, they don't eat meat and stuff.
I see. Were there any funny or unexpected moments during the trek that caught you off guard?
Oh, yeah.
Or that you like to share?
Plenty of. You know, it's, you know what I love about the outdoors? It's not only a nice journey physically, mentally, for what it gives you and everything, but it's also a bonding thing, which is amazing, because what you talk about on a regular day in town is definitely what you don't ever mention when you trek. When you trek and when you go to one place to the other, you always talk about what you see. So when you have nice mountains in front of you, you talk about these. When there's a nice view, you talk about it. And when you open up and you are yourself, all those trekking with you do the same. And the kind of talk that results is absolutely stunning, because it's an opportunity for you to be the kind of guy you want to be.
Authentic.
You know,
you can be yourself.
Authentic, yeah. And everyone becomes authentic, because everyone do not have anything to prove anymore.
Yes,
you see everyone in their most natural ways when they wake up and their difficulties, etc. So it's an amazing bonding experience with the climbing team with you.
I see.
Funny stories, plenty of funny stories. So I don't know where to begin. You know, toilet is always an issue, because
I can imagine.
Because use your imagination. Specifically, when you go to those tea houses, they do not have a top of the notch.
Yes, I understand what you mean. Yeah. So
you
have to do your pre ritual first before you use it.
Yes, you know, and it's not easy doing it all the time. I didn't have that option, that difficulty in Kilimanjaro, because we had private toilets with the climbing company, which was amazing, with a specific tent all by itself.
Okay.
But it's always so nice, you know, when you share all those stories when they're climbing buddies, and it's really, really an amazing bonding thing.
Yeah, I see. John, now let's talk a bit about Mount Kilimanjaro. How different is it compared to the Everest climb, the Everest Base Camp climb?
It's different because, again, when you go to the base camp, you go from village to village.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go from village A to village B, you have sometimes you go up, you go down, there's a plateau, you cross it. So you have, you know, some up and down thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you climb Kilimanjaro, you start from the bottom of the mountain until you reach the top of the mountain, and then you go back down. So it's a mountain climb. You know, there is no way that the first 7 days, it's only going up, and then you go down. So it's different.
Is it more difficult? Is the Kilimanjaro more difficult for a first timer? Or
yes, it's definitely more challenging, because not only you only climb, but you also go from one ecosystem to the other. You start from where, you know, at sea level, where the people, you know, take care of the land. And then you have to go through a rainforest. Then you go up, they go up until you reach Arctic areas where you have no vegetation. You have negative temperatures. Wow. Where it snows all the time. And you do it. So you go from one ecosystem to the other in 4 days. So you go from plus 20. I start in my t-shirt on day one. Uh-huh. And I am minus 10. I'm talking Celsius, minus 15 on day five.
Okay. Very big differences in temperatures and ecosystem.
Yeah. An ecosystem, exactly.
Do you encounter any wildlife, or it's very safe? There's no danger. Like there's no animals, wild animals.
Yeah, when you climb Mount Kilimanjaro, we sleep in specific camps designated by the government there.
Okay.
You know, when you reach each altitude, you have specific areas in which we have to camp in. You cannot camp on your own wherever you want. You have to go. So when you reach this altitude, you have to go to this camp, Karanga camp, for instance, or whatever. Once we go to that camp, because all tents are, you know, close to each other. Yeah. Yes, I encounter some, you know, you can hear middle of the night when there's almost nothing. I can hear some wildlife, wildlife activity, you know, the jackals and
the wolves.
Yeah. You can hear that, you know, you can hear wildlife.
Okay.
But you cannot see it. I haven't encountered any wild animal while on the mountain on my day tracks, because we only track during daytime.
Yes.
At night, I can hear it is happening all around me, but I didn't see anything myself.
I see. Did you have any "what am I doing here" moments where you questioned your initial decision for attempting these treks, like at one point? Or you were always confident that everything's fine?
This is an amazing question. I had my doubts before I traveled, but once I said, shall I do it? Shall I not do it? And now I'll get back to this question when I'm going to mention what I'm going to do next. From the moment I decided I want to climb Kilimanjaro, honestly, I didn't doubt I can do it because I wanted it so much.
Okay.
And now, And I said to myself, this is going to be my last mountain. On the way down from Kilimanjaro, all I can think of is what's going to be my next mountain.
Aha. So on the way up, you said that's going to be my last mountain.
Will I be able to do it? It's 6,000 meters. This is the first time I do such a thing. On the way back, well, it wasn't too hard. Why not?
What's next?
Next is, I can say it right now, it's another one of the seven summits. It's Mount Elbrus, which I've started to work on. It's going to be done next year.
Where is it located?
It's the highest peak. It's in Russia. It's in Russia, but it's part of Europe, and it's the highest peak of Europe.
And how tall is it?
It's 5,642 meters.
So taller than the Mont Blanc in France?
Taller than the Mont Blanc, of course. Yeah, Mont Blanc is the highest peak of France.
Aha, yes, you're right.
Le plus haut sommet de France, 4,807 meters.
Okay.
Mount Elbrus, which is located in Russia, but in the European part of Russia,
yes.
It's 5,643 or 44 meters, more or less.
Okay.
It's the highest peak in Europe, and it's also part of the seven summits. So if I'm able to achieve it and climb it, I will have two of the seven summits under my belt.
So Kilimanjaro is one, and...
It's the highest peak in Africa. So the highest peak of south of Africa,
okay.
The continent, part of the seven summits. Mount Elbrus is the highest peak of Europe, part of the seven summits.
Got it.
It's like Denali in North America. Denali.
Yes.
Mount Denali, it's in Denali Park in America, in the U.S.
Yes.
It's the highest of the North American peaks. You have Mount Aconcagua, it's the highest of the South American, it's in the Les Landes, it's in Argentina.
Okay.
And the highest peak in Asia. Guess what it is?
Isn't it Everest?
Yes, exactly.
It's Everest, yes.
The highest peak of Asia and the highest peak in the world.
Yes, yeah absolutely. And John, just I think this question, maybe everybody asked you that question already before, but I'd like to ask it. How did it feel to be standing at the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro, or when you basically, you know, said to yourself, that's done now?
I'm going to answer in a very nice way, I hope. I cried 5 times in my whole life, but real cry.
Yeah.
I cried when I had my first baby, when I saw my daughter. I was at hospital and I started crying all by myself looking at her from
tears
happiness.
Tears of joy, of course. Yeah.
Tears of joy. Yes. When I had my baccalaureate, whatever it's...
when you graduated from high school, yes.
When I graduated from high school, exactly. And when I got to base camp, I was walking... And I saw base camp, and while I was walking, I felt this immense joy. I've done it. I started crying because of happiness. And the same thing happened a few months ago, 2 months ago, when I climbed Kilimanjaro. I was happy when I got there. And when I saw the sign and I hugged the sign, I also started crying. So it says a lot about how emotional I was.
Yes. Absolutely,
getting there. So it's indescribable, the happiness that it brings, and
the satisfaction
For me, this is happiness, you know. And each one of us has it's my Everest, you know. I cannot climb the mountain, but for me, Kilimanjaro was my Everest.
That was a proper summit that you conquered, right? Everest was more of a trek on the base camp.
Mountain I've climbed, and Mount Elbrus is more difficult because it's more technical. I need to work now on my climbing skills. There's a roping system there. I need to climb, and I have to have those
those grip like grips.
Yes, yeah. You need to use crampons.
Okay.
When you have your shoes, don't slip
so that you can grip on the snow. And John is this Russian mountain. I can't remember the name, or I can't.
Elbrus.
How do you spell it?
Elbrus.
Mount Elbrus. Okay. So, can you also summit that mountain? Can you reach the summit
yes,
there? You
yes. can. And I have a few friends who were there last week.
Okay.
So I say hi to them. I will tag them.
Yes.
Hi, Av. So next week. Sorry. So hopefully next year I can set my feet on the top of Mount Elbrus. That's my next.
That's your next
dream.
Your next level. Your next challenge. And when you reached the summit of Kilimanjaro, did you plant the Lebanese flag?
I did all sorts of pictures. I have a picture with the Lebanese flag.
Oh, so you did take one? Yes, yes.
Yes, that's of great. Course. This is part of the routine. I did also one with the climbing company I was with, Dakik Expeditions. So I did one with it. And I had plenty of amazing pictures by myself.
Yeah.
But of course, I did one with the Lebanese
I've
flag,
seen already a
of
few
course.
Nice pictures on your Instagram account. So I'm sure you have plenty
Thank
more.
You. Yes. It's an amazing moment, believe me.
Yeah, no, I do. I believe you. You know, maybe one day, now you're giving me like some inspiration to actually do it, to attempt it one day myself.
Oh. Yes,
yes, for sure.
But before you start climbing Kilimanjaro, do some nice mountain.
I should, I should start by doing the Lebanese peaks first. I haven't really done that in Lebanon. And Lebanon is very rich in its mountains, so...
Amazingly rich. And when you are here, you let me know. We go
Absolutely.
Have a hike one day.
I will definitely contact you, sir, regarding that. John, let's talk a bit now about the emotional and also the personal development aspect. So how did these climbing experiences you've had change your perspective on life? And what lessons have you learned from them?
Well, this is the most important question, because I can know. I don't know how to put this in words, but it's the best thing I've done, you know, because I work every week waiting for the weekend to come, waiting to come back to those, you know, to what I to what it does to me, to my mind, to my way of thinking, to my soul, to everything that I do. So it does change you. It makes you a stronger man. It makes you
More persistent, more like kind of persistent, patient.
Because you know, climbing a mountain is like a life journey, because you have a destination, which is the top of the mountain. It's like in business, you want to sign a certain deal with someone. So you have an objective, which is the peak of the mountain. You have difficulties before getting there because it's not easy. It might rain, it might snow, it's far. So you have to go through these difficulties. It's like in real life. So it teaches you along the way so many lessons in perseverance, in
resilience,
how much you want, in resilience. And it's beautiful because you do it in the most natural of ways. And that's what's really amazing, because you don't do it by making deals behind people's doors or backs. And you have to do it yourself. No one will carry you until the top to the top of the mountain. So once you achieve that and you reach your goal, you reach the top of the mountain, the feeling you have standing on at the summit is like, I don't know. It's indescribable.
Yes, I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
Yeah, but so this is for me the most beautiful journey I can have.
Yes, I can imagine. Did it increase your levels of concentration? And, you know, every day,
yeah.
I mean, nowadays, we are all the time distracted by technology, by WhatsApp, yeah. by Instagram, etc. When you go on a trekking journey, I guess you are disconnecting from all that noise that you get from technology, right? In a certain way, to a certain extent, at least?
I'm going to tell you. It's right and not right. You are disconnected because you are on a mountain, but I am still connected because I like to share as well.
Okay.
I'm going to give you my version of climbing, which is not necessarily the version of others, because some others get annoyed by it because I take a lot of pictures, because I like to not only go through the journey, but I like taking memories back from this journey. So when I see a nice view or a nice tree or nice animals along the way, I like to take pictures. So I use technology to take those pictures. And new technologies allow us to take nicer and nicer pictures at night, during the day, you know, with the new iPhones with the new phones, you can have better and more advanced pictures. So I do that. I use my my watch to give me the figures. How much do I need? So technology is always there somehow to guide me.
But it's a technology you are using for the trek itself, right? It's not technology just to distract yourself.
So
yes,
no.
That's what I meant.
Yes. So I don't follow the wrong track. So I'm always.
Yes.
The right path.
Okay.
So I'm not lost, etc. So you still use technology, but definitely I don't carry with me all my problems. You know, when you walk in nature, nature does this amazing thing to your soul. It gets you back. Nature gets you back to it. Because when I start walking, I drive to the start of the trek. I speak on the phone. I solve problems. But when I start walking, you need 10 minutes. You start to unwind alone and without making any effort. Half an hour through the walk, you're totally becoming in harmony with nature. An hour through the walk, you are totally disconnected. 2 hours, definitely you leave all your problems behind. So it is the best of the doctors and the cheapest. So if everyone has any problem, guys, try to just walk. Walk is the biggest and most amazing thing God gave us to forget everything.
Absolutely.
Just walk, you know, just walk and see what happens.
In nature, specifically in nature.
In nature,
absolutely.
Because
it makes a difference.
Nature is so beautiful. You hear the nature sounds, you know, the water, the animals, the birds, etc. You see greenery all around you. You see mountains, valleys.
Absolutely.
How can you not be or fall in love with that? It's so natural. So
for sure.
It's a healing process. It's a healing
process.
Even
science, John. Science is backing those kind of findings or this advice.
Yes.
I've recorded a previous episode with Dr. Ford Dyke, an American specialist in human performance optimization. And if you check my channel, one of the videos says that he's done research in that area.
Yes.
And he's proven how walking in nature has a much higher potential to replenish your concentration ability versus walking, for example, in an urban setting. Like, this is now proven by science.
Yes. And it happens naturally without any effort. That's also the amazing thing about it. So all those who have any problem, try it once. Just try it once. Give it a chance and try it once. But don't do it for 5-10 minutes. Do it for an hour.
Yes.
Just try it and see how you transform into this new you.
Yes.
And you'll be amazed by the result. It costs nothing, but don't do it with not the right shoes.
Oh, so regular training shoes would not do the job? You need like a...
Well, you need preparations. Okay. Again, when you go outdoors, you need to plan. So depending upon where you go, if you go sleep, you need to have everything.
You need the right equipment, the right gear, as they say.
Most important thing, exactly, gear. But the most important thing is the right shoe. Once you have the right shoe, which will protect you from everything, which will make you feel comfortable when you walk, go wild.
Yeah, like a normal hiking shoe does the job, right? Or you need special trekking shoes?
Not the hiking shoe, the job. All the brands are almost the same.
Almost the same, yeah.
So,
I see.
But have the right shoe, yeah.
Okay.
You know, that's it. That's my only recommendation. A backpack, put on some nice tasty stuff. And
get good
some
snacks
gear
with you. Don't forget the snacks. Yes.
Get your girlfriend.
Yes.
Just get on the way and go.
Yes, absolutely.
And have
John, many of our listeners are looking for ways to stay motivated and push beyond their limits in general. And I'm sure the mountains have taught you many lessons in perseverance, as you've said. How do you stay motivated when you are deep in a challenge? Because as you said, it's not easy, but you keep your mind fixed on the end destination. But along the way, there are obstacles. How do you overcome them? Do you simply like do like positive self-talk, or do you think about the end result? Can you share like some tips here?
I don't do anything. I just feel when I'm back from a journey, I just have this immense pleasure that is inside of me, which is the only thing that I need. And when I have this immense pleasure, all I want to do is go back. As I said, I have doubts before climbing Kilimanjaro. When I was going down the mountain, I was thinking about my next mountain. And it happens every time, every day or every climb that I do in Lebanon or outside Lebanon. On my way back, I cannot stop thinking about my next journey. It happens naturally. It's not something that I do to stay motivated. It's simply what it brings me in terms of emotions, of sense of achievement, of pleasures, of excitement. What it brings me, the only thing I need is to keep these emotions flowing in, because they fuel you for my whole week. You know, when I go outside during my weekend, I have enough full fuel, sorry, to go through my week. If I miss one weekend, I feel something missing. I didn't have my shot.
Yeah.
Adventure. Drug.
Yes.
A nature shot.
Yes.
And it's the most beautiful shot one can have. So I don't do any effort. by living it through, and by how I feel on the way back, this is all I need to start planning on my next journey.
So the journey itself is itself like pleasurable and enjoyable, and you crave it all the time.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So this is kind of maybe like how can I say, like it gives an indication that when this is why when people choose to join work and passion, and their work is their passion, they usually succeed a lot because they find intrinsic pleasure and joy in whatever they're doing.
You cannot fail if you do what you love. Even if you are into garbage cleaning or whatever, if you're good at it, everyone, you like to do it. If you're a meat person, you don't like garbage, and what you do as a job, if you like it, I mean, you cannot be the top garbage cleaner in the world. So everyone would love to work with you. So you will make a lot of money. And this is actually applicable to anything that you do. You cannot succeed if you don't like it. You can follow people. You can imitate people. You can try. You can try as much as possible, but I'm not sure you're going to be, it's going to be really you, Yanni. So that's it. I learned about mountains late in my life. And because of the pleasure it brings me on each journey, I always want to come back.
Do you wish you've learned about it earlier in your life?
Yes, yes. Yes. Yes, I wish, because the joys it's, you know, I told you I had tears in my eyes when my daughter was born, and I also had tears in my eyes when I got to base camp. So it gives you kind of
an indication of how important this is.
Yeah. How important it meant to me, and how it went emotional.
Absolutely.
So,
John, what's next for you? I know you mentioned this mount in Russia, which I still struggle to remember. Elbrus. There you go. Yes. I got it right. Yeah. So I know this is next, but are you planning to tackle all seven mounts?
No. Because I know I can't. That's simple. And it goes back to the...
Why not? But why not?
Because I don't have... I'm like we say in French, je suis un hiker du dimanche. C'est-à-dire, I'm joking. Which means I hike for pleasure. And I need certain technical skills to go for higher mountains, you know, to go for 6, 7, or 8 thousanders. If I want to go climb mountains like, let's say, Mount Pumori or Amadablam, these are in the Valley of the Himalayas. They're very technical. They're very difficult. Mount Everest is very difficult. I don't have the skills, okay, and I'm not a sports person.
You need to have specific physical skills, yeah, and training to get to these.
And as it's, yeah, specifically training. Yes, you need to train. You need to be able, you know, to climb Mount Everest. You have to stay 2 months in base
Whoa.
Camp. 2 months, and for 5 to 10 days, I get it's too much. Imagine staying too much, because you do rotations, and rotations are very difficult in base camps, because they're, you know, above 8,000 meters, you go up and down, you have the wildest snowstorms there. It's very difficult, and it's definitely not for me. I do it. I know my limits. I think Mount Elbrus, sort of mountains, will be my...
Your ceiling. Your limit.
Yes.
Okay.
But you have plenty of other mountains like Mount Elbrus in the world.
That are similar. Okay.
Are similar. I don't need to go more difficult. I need to go to other locations. Another one on my list is Mount Ararat.
The Armenian mountain.
Yes.
Is it that high?
Yes.
I didn't know it's that high.
It's above 5,000. It's a 5,100 or 200
okay.
meters. It's 5,000. Yeah. It's quite difficult. It's not very easy. It's not like Kilimanjaro, but it's a good mountain to climb, and plenty of others. Maybe Mont Blanc. Mont Blanc, you
yes.
know, Mont Blanc
it's a mid-range mountain.
It's not as high as Mount Elbrus, but it's more difficult to climb than Mount Elbrus. Mont Blanc has a very difficult technical section before you get to the top, in which you need some mountaineering skills to
climb. So you may attempt it as well, maybe in the future as well.
Yeah, maybe in the future. But this will be, you know, Matterhorn in Switzerland is also very technical. Okay. You know, La Montagne, celle de...
The Picon?
You know, Toblerone.
It's...
The Picon, yes.
Or the cheese, you know? Yes.
Yes, okay. It's a very technical mountain as well. It's not easy to climb.
All right. So you still have plenty of options.
Yes, yes. No need to go higher.
Okay, I see. John, it was a pleasure to catch up and listen to your recent inspiring adventures. I'd like to hear if you have any final words or if you'd like to share maybe any piece of advice for people who'd like to, you know, partake in the same hobby that you have now. What is an advice? Like, how can they start?
Yeah. I have a life advice, not specific about, you know, I like mountains. I encourage everyone to search for what they like. I found mountains. I found it.
I mean, you like music as well, right? Music is,
music.
Is your other big passion. Yeah, I know that.
Definitely. And we can have stories about it. I keep listening to new tracks each night, and it's still in me. But that's another story. So if I have one advice to everyone listening, or if I can inspire everyone listening, it would be by saying this. It's in three words. One, pinpoint what you love. Find it. You know, not so many people know what they want. And that's really unfortunate. Wherever I go, I listen to people asking me questions about that. People need to know what they want and be honest about it. So that's one thing. The second is accept it. Whatever it is, if you like to have a bakery, if you like, I don't know, if you like animals, do it as a job life, you know, work with animals your whole life. So one, pinpoint what you love, be true about it. Two, accept it. And three is the hardest. Live it. We have only one life. Yeah, we are here only once. Yeah, we don't have a second chance. You want to lose it doing some other people's
jobs or dreams or, yeah. Job.
Spend it doing what you love. You love animals. Work with them all your whole life. You will be amazing in doing it because you love animals. You truly do love animals. So no one will be able to do it the way you will. So stick to it. So this is it. I found mountains. I found myself in mountains. I'm trying to live it as much as I can. And maybe I'll work in this in my third and last part of my life because I have so many ideas. Now, by the way, I'm going to start. Can I end up with with the publicity?
For sure. Yeah. Yes, you can.
I'm working on a podcast a bit like yours. About the outdoors, and it's going to be called My Lebanon, because I know the title, My Lebanon happens outdoors, and I want to share this passion with the Lebanese and everyone I know. And I'm going to do it through a podcast, which will all be dedicated to My Lebanon, which is the outdoors of Lebanon, and I will share my passion, and hopefully I can also empower others and inspire them to go outdoors and to love Lebanon.
So great. So you'll be talking about Lebanese hiking trails and nice hidden gems to discover. You'll talk about these topics?
I'm going to bring shepherds. I'm going to get people from Akkar to talk. I'm going to get people from the south to talk. Just regular people who love mountains, who I see along the way. I'm going to be talking about the people I see on the trails, the officials, you know, we have in the Lebanese army, there's a unit which is mountain rescue. So with these people, with the Croix Rouge Libanese, also there's a rescue unit, a high mountain. I'm going to talk.
The Lebanese Red Cross, yes.
Exactly. And so many other, everyone involved in what I see as my life.
Sounds very exciting. So on this, I wish you good luck in this project.
You will be my guest one of the.
It will be my pleasure. It will be my pleasure for sure. John, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. And again, best of luck on your adventures, whether in outdoor or in business.
Thank you.
Best of luck for your next podcast. So I'd like to maybe talk to you again in the future, for sure, once you conquer additional mountains, and I'm sure you're going to be doing that. So again,
what is the height of Europe?
Sorry?
What is the highest peak of Europe?
It's the Elbrus. Yeah. There you go. I got it. And the highest peak of France is Mont Blanc.
Mont Blanc, yes, exactly.
Because I used to think that it was Mont Blanc, but you corrected me. So thanks
Mont Blanc
for the tip.
Peak of France.
Of France. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
Merci. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Sean. Take care.
Cheers.
Cheers.